hearing, I presume you'll fill this camp or waiting to be heard.
Seems no point in us sitting here while waiting for a couple of minutes.
Thank you for putting me in. I don't actually really realise, no, I'm doing. I've put in a submission. I think I'm the voice of reason. I was actually born here, and I've seen a lot of great changes and a lot of not so good changes. But the thing that's really concerning me at the moment is the congestion, and it's not only the vehicles. I'm worried about the Kiwi lifestyle, the quality of Kiwi lifestyle. Not everybody that comes to this town is actually coming here as a waitress or not. There's anything wrong with waitress being there myself. Residents and ratepayers should not have to have their homes and lifestyle compromised, street parking, views, increased crime to provide cheap housing, congested properties to supply accommodation for businesses. That's what I have a concern with. I realise the CBD will, and all the old school locals realise the CBD around here will go higher and all the rest and multi-dwelling, but what concerns me is existing properties, existing suburbs around Queenstown. When I hear that you've got one dwelling on a property at the moment and you can put three dwellings on it, and you don't require any additional off-street parking. I bumped into a lady from Auckland who her and her husband came down here to take up a position, and they bought a house over at Kelvin Heights. It's not one of the lakefront multi-millionaire jobs or anything, but she was so excited. For the first time, they were going to be able to have a children's party and invite people to their house. And I'm sitting there going, that's sort of, that's what we do, But that'd come from Auckland. You can't do that in Auckland. You have to go to McDonald's, you have to go somewhere else.
I'm sorry, I have to tell you that Commissioner Munro presently...
He's from Auckland? No. Well, this lady, her and her husband are from Auckland. He's come down to work for Fulton Hogan as a manager.
I haven't finished. And before I came down here, I was from Auckland, and we regularly had birthday parties at home for my son.
Well, maybe you were living in a different suburb, but this lady said to me she was so looking forward to being able to invite people and they could come to the house and park outside within a 100-metre range. You look at the new subdivision shot over, you can't get up the developers about it. They're doing what they're allowed to do. But you drive down there, there's no parking, there's no off-street parking. It's a hazard. And that's what's worrying me, because Shotover, if that's a sign of things to come, it's a hazard from kids on the street, it's a hazard. There's no parking, there's no... 60, in the 60s, mum, it was 1.5 cars per house. Dad had the car, mum had the shopping trolley, dropped the kids off. Now, you've got 4 or 5 bedroom houses that are housing up to 8 or 10 people, and there's no requirement for off-street parking. So I'd like to see new suburbs that are opening up, and they've got new zonings or density or whatever, and that's the person's choice who's purchasing there. And as long as there's got to be off-street car parking, you can't have a one-resident house turning into a three-dwelling property with no additional off-street parking. I mean, it's crazy, my opinion anyway. 40 years ago, as an example from my perspective, I couldn't afford rent in this town. When I left school, I couldn't afford rent. So I had to look for a job that provided staff accommodation. Otherwise, I was off to Invercargill or Dunedin for some cheaper accommodation. I mean, times are changing. They're the same to a certain degree. I had my own business. I had to rent 3 houses to provide accommodation for my staff. Blanket Bay built 4 purpose-built houses for their staff. User pays. You've got a multi-billion-dollar company at Hilton over at Kelvin Heights, and they haven't provided enough off-street parking for their own staff, our own guests, let alone staff, and it's blocked up all Peninsula Road and half of Frankton right through to the school. The school was finding it as a hazard. So I just feel that I think we've got to be very careful about waving the wand. No offence, but the gentleman, I think, who was responsible for waving the wand has come from Auckland. Now, just so you know, my mother was a Jaffa. My mum's a Jaffa. She got picked up hitchhiking. But, for example, like, if I went to Aspen tomorrow and said, I'm here, I've got a job in a restaurant, where's my cheap housing? What would Aspen do? They'd say, well, this is the style, this is the environment. They provide accommodation for the staff all the way up the valley back to Greenwood Springs. They retain the image, the atmosphere. They don't kill the golden goose. We still need a bit of greenery around the district, I think. And I'm not talking parks. Some people don't want to look out their window and look into the next door neighbour's lounge. So I think, I don't know. I've looked at all the people that are coming in here, so there'll be all sorts of people. But I just think people are coming here for the quality of life, the Kiwi lifestyle. Not everybody is used to... I think the user pays on the business front, and also I don't think it's responsibility to slice up Queenstown into small pockets and ruin people's lives that have been here for decades, just for the sake of providing accommodation for people. My husband's got a worker, he lives in Wanaka. He's travelled back and forth to Queenstown for 7 years. Him and his family are very happy. My girlfriend, she lives in Cromwell. Her husband works in Arrowtown. It took me about the same length of time to get here today than it does for them. So what I'm saying is, let's not get too heavy-handed with the slicing and dicing. I don't know. So basically, I put a submission in. I just want to say that, you know, please don't kill what we've got and what people come to see. And it's not our responsibility to cover accommodation for billion-dollar companies. And I was a company, and I had to provide accommodation for my staff. NZ Ski, I believe, they were setting up accommodation in Cromwell. That's a price of doing business. It's not a price that should be affect the next 30 years in this town, slicing and dicing everything up into small pockets and causing problems. I'll be honest, my husband came home the other day and he went, oh my God, we're going to have to shift. If somebody parks here, I won't be able to get my boat out. I mean, we're not super rich people by any means, but it's just, I go and visit my mother at Frankton and you can't get anywhere near the place because of the congestion around the place. And that's not because of business, that's because we haven't got some car parks, but it's because you've got eight people living in a four-bedroom house and there's eight cars. So I think it's a planning thing that's got to be looked at. Anyway, any questions?
No, let me just comment. I've just come off the council, serving three terms.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed reading what you've written, and you've very clearly identified the sort of problems that council has been grappling with. And I must say, not that successfully over the last 9 years. And the community needs people like you. But it's how to get your message, you know, clearly to council. One way would have been for you to stand for council, and I think you would have made a good councillor. The other avenues you've got, probably through submissions to the annual plan.
Oh yeah, I do that.
Yeah, and do that. If I could say this, the other may not agree. It's a little hard to get something specific that we can put in what we're working with, you know, out of what you've
just said. I know. I'm just saying.
Given us here, because we're looking at, you know, the sort of rules and policies and stuff, but people go to if they want to do something, whereas, you know, it's hard to put stuff into the district plan that encourages. It's not impossible, and the council's tried to do some of it, like rezoning Gorge Road for apartment condos.
Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, I'm looking at Kelvin Heights, I'm looking at other existing long-term residential areas, and I know there's a lot of older people over there, and they're absolutely heartbroken that, you know, their situation could be changing overnight by the swipe of a pen by somebody who didn't really, hasn't lived here, hasn't put the long term into it. And why should, you know, I'm sure there's critics out there that says, you know, oh, you've got your slice of paradise, why can't somebody else have some? But yeah, and there's a lot of people that have done it, and to have your existing homes and stuff, and the next thing, because of the swipe of a pen, the developer or whatever buys the place next door, and you've got six apartments looking in on your long-term family home that you've worked, you know, 60 years of your life to get to, and you've got 15 cars battling out your street, you know, outside. I'm just saying. So all this medium, low, and high density is all a fait accompli already.
Is there anything I can say
to change your mind? And what I'm saying is, new developments, then fine. That person who chooses to stay, buy into that, they know what they're getting. But for God's sake, make them have more off-street parking. This is absolutely ludicrous what's going on in the district, and it's killing this place. I remember old Mrs. Lewis, she was the first one to build at Kelvin Heights, and they all thought she'd lost her marbles. And you couldn't build anything over there without reflective glass, and it had to be the colour tones of brown and green, so we from this side couldn't see over there. I mean, I realise the change is at a foot, but there's lots of land, Kingston, Cromwell, there's lots of other places, and it's only half an hour's drive, three quarters of an hour's drive, you know. Okay, I'll leave you alone. I've driven in for the occasion.
Do you have any questions, Commissioner?
No,
I don't either. Thank you very much.
That's right.
Set the season for questions for members, thanks.
The high density residential zone will play a key role in minimising urban sprawl and consolidating growth in existing urban areas. Some changes have been recommended to the notified provisions relating to urban design provisions and standards, building heights, and reflection of the proximity of the state highway. The summary of evidence also provides a response to the panel's minutes dated 22nd of September relating to QAC and Mountain Crystal Limited, and an addendum to the accept/reject table showing my recommendations on the missing submission points. Some submitters sought mandatory use of the urban design panel and more explicit provisions for quality urban design. I recommend the urban design panel continues on a non-mandatory basis. My view, as supported by Mr. Garth Gardner, is that the recommended provisions will support good urban design outcomes within the context of an intensifying zone and that, as referenced by Mr. Philip Osborne, the opportunities of the zone should provide for efficient use of the district's limited high-density land resource. I do recommend some changes which I believe better balance urban design, such as reference to quality urban design in redrafted objective 9.2.2, privacy under redrafted policy 9.2.3.3 and rule 9.4.4, and sunshine and light access under redrafted rules 9.4.4 and 9.5.1. Also, relevance is that council officers are considering developing residential design guidelines as a variation to stage one of the PDP. My section 42A report highlights some concerns with the subjective nature of guidelines that may compromise mandated compliance. However, I acknowledge their development may supplement the urban design provisions. The submission of the Punamu Body Corporate Committee and the evidence of Mr. Timothy Walsh sets great emphasis on urban design and a structure plan for Lot 5. I maintain that recommended standards, in addition to the location of the access easement and lower elevation of Lot 5, will be sufficient to achieve separation within the Punamu apartments without unduly limiting the opportunities of Lot 5. I understand that approved plans for the site identified this easement for landscaping amenity purposes. And just on that point, I acknowledge that there's been some comment made on that through the evidence of Rebecca Wall, and that point may be a little bit misguided, so I acknowledge that. I do see merit in the removal of reasonable from notified and redraft objective 9.2.3 and policy 9.2.3.1. However, I also acknowledge that these provisions should also not become too far weighted to amenity protection. Design guidelines, if developed and notified in stage two, may also go some way to addressing the concerns of PBCC, although in the interim I consider the provisions adequate. Many submissions sought changes to building heights for both flat and sloping sites. Some were opposed to Homestar Green Star height incentive included in the notified chapter. I recommend that the Homestar Green Star height incentive be removed and translated to a restricted discretionary height limit of 15 metres for flat sites. The consequence of this is that the 15 metre height is no longer possible on a permitted basis and requires consideration through the application for a resource consent. For sloping sites, only reformatting and changes to the exclusions and matters of discretion have been recommended. I have recommended deleting floor area ratio rule for flat sites due to possible unintended outcomes and instead relying on pure built height controls. I've considered the evidence of Mr. Williams and Mr. Dent on behalf of Mount Crystal Limited and see some merit in the use of a 9 metre plus 2 metre roof bonus for sloping sites. I consider this may provide for articulation of roof forms and may mitigate effects of building bulk to neighbours where recession planes do not apply. However, I consider that additional technical evidence is needed on this matter to address possible unintended consequences, such as the possibility of mono-pitched roofs taking advantage of the increased 11-metre height envelope, leading to a possible need for separate reduced height standards for gable and mono-pitched roofs. And recognising this may unintentionally discourage mono-pitched roofs, which can still provide good urban design outcomes and maintain an alpine appearance. With excavation, the notified 10 metre RD height envelope measured from ground level as defined can still allow three or more stories in a variety of roof forms, and that a resource consent would be required for RD height limits regardless and any minor breaches to height to achieve a gable roof if necessary to achieve better design outcomes may be considered favourably. An alternative solution may be to retain the 10 metre RD height limit with allowance for minor breaches for a roof bonus as a discretionary activity rather than the current non-complying status. I also accept removal of the word adequately from policy 9.2.3.2 and consider reference to mitigated alone will achieve the same intent. Reflecting the proximity of State Highway 6A, new rules for sound insulation of buildings, increased setbacks and notification requirements to the NZTA have been recommended. Also acknowledge the evidence of Mr. Anthony McColl on behalf of NZTA, which seeks changes to the wording of notified rules 9.6.1 and 9.6.2. Removal of the term direct access is unclear in relation to right-of-way and easements. Also, NZTA may not always give full approval to developments, and therefore I consider that the terminology should be consistent with the RMA and refer to notification.
Yeah, well, thanks. One line of inquiry we pursued at the last hearing had to do with the material real world distinction between the outcomes that are likely in a low density zone, a medium density zone, a high density zone. Let's not talk about the low density zone for now, but in your mind, if you're a visitor to Queenstown in 15 years' time, let's say a lot of developments happened in line with the provisions recommended, could you describe what you see the key differences between the medium density zone and the high density zone would be?
The key difference between those zones in terms of what we're promoting through this review would be the height at this point and the increased site coverage and increased yield that you can achieve on a particular site. So that's by virtue of the height as well as the increased site coverage to 70%, which I've recommended through the chambers.
And what if you were in Wanaka where there's not the same height contemplated for the high density zone?
In Wanaka, yes, that distinction in height isn't necessarily there between the medium density and the high density because the high density rules for the Wanaka is limited to 8 metres in height. The site coverage again would be higher under the high density zone than the medium density, but the height limits are similar. In addition to that, if one were to develop in the high density zone and seek something over and above that in terms of intensification or height, the purpose and the objectives and policies would be more aligned to increased intensification in the high density zone, possibly more so than the medium density.
Hang on, let me check that. I thought that a non-compliant consent would be required to exceed the 8 metre height in the Wanaka high density zone.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, that doesn't sound to me like a plan that's looking favourably towards bricks of height or otherwise contemplating it.
Yes, I take that point. If that situation were to arise in Wanaka, as one was seeking a non-compliant consent, the way I would see that is that the purpose and the objectives and policies of the high density zone would come into question and provide that additional scope for intensification.
I'd like to just push that a little harder. You talk about the distinction in height and site coverage and yield. We start with the low density zone, and the proposed rules talk about a density of 1 to 300 on that gentle density method with a residential flat permitted as well, so it's effectively one household to 150, and that's low density. Then the medium density talks about, ironically, slightly higher, lower densities, 250-ish, maybe 200s. High density zone, what are we talking about, smaller units or different types of units?
We don't have, the rules don't have criteria around unit size, and it's something that would be difficult to enforce, I suppose. So one in the high density zone can still develop any unit size, but it's likely that the car parking, and so the modelling that often the schools provided for us in developing this evidence highlighted that the car parking is a large constraint to the number of units per site. But I can see your point in that the density achievable in each of those zones may not be distinguished as much as it could be.
Yeah, well, I mean, these two most obviously, in the case of Wanaka, is it actually a high density residential zone? Or is it actually a medium density residential zone? In terms of the framework of, let's just say, subtle distinctions or modest distinctions between the three zones. Are you still of the view that the Wanaka high density zone is actually, in terms of the outcome sought by way of the rules framework, is that best sitting in the high density zone or the medium density zone?
I think in terms of what's existing in that zone at the moment, the height is effectively three stories, as seen from the road, and that would, along my line of thinking, with the heights effectively indicating or distinguishing the zones, would align that area more to the high density. But I accept that there's the height limit for the zone, and what is existing on the ground does not necessarily align at the moment. And that may be because the site was sloping, which has a different height rule that applies, and depending where that was taken from ground level, presumably is how the multiple three stories or more is even about.
Discussion we had yesterday with Mr. Walsh, and while he started in terms of his client at the Ponamu Block 5 site, his evidence and his comments to us addressed the high density zone more generally. And we were talking about this issue of accommodating intensification but also balancing next door neighbours' amenity values. He put to us a view that it would be more effective in terms of serving the overall plan's intent if there was just more area of high density zoning with slightly less aggressive development entitlements within that zone. Now, that's not your position, I accept that, but the question for my mind is, are you comfortable that the extent of the high density zone proposed, since it's been put to us as a question mark, is right?
I would consider that there could be more areas of it, of high density zone, and more areas were considered as part of the review but didn't get through to the notified version, unfortunately.
You say unfortunately, yeah. Does that mean you think they should have?
If we're looking,
I'm interested in your opinion, not the council's.
I did hear your questioning as to whether there should be more high density zoning on the outer edges of town where land values are lower in that, well, presumably lower, and that would be more affordable in terms of catering to that side of the market as opposed to in town here, which is higher value. And my thinking on that is, while that might be of value and contribute to the housing supply, it would need to be well thought out and well designed in terms of all those other amenities that we would like to see come with high density land. So the locations that we have at the moment is beneficial for that zone, because the high density zone as it is currently has access to all those services. It's close to towns, town centres, transport, amenities, parks, all the things that are good and make a high density area vibrant and places that people want to live in.
We're
so my concern with extending it would be
there. We're not doing mapping issues here, but Mr. Chair, it would certainly help my understanding of your views and your positions if you were able to identify those locations where you thought there was an argument, purely in terms of your own view, where that high density zone might make sense. Because I think what you said is, if I've heard you correctly, you think there are some areas where the zone could be applied safely based on your analysis of being close to the town centre and meeting all those expectations that you agree with, but there might be some other locations that would need further thought. So forget those latter ones, but if there are areas in your view that could have been better managed with a high density zone, it would help me to understand where they are, if that's something you're agreeable to, Mr. Chief.
I am. I'm just thinking things that might be easier if you could draw it on some maps.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind.
Rather than trying to just explain it to us.
Yeah, I think that would be something I'd like to put into the reply.
Mm-hmm.
But just generally, I think those locations in my mind have been probably talked about already, but they have their own constraints, and so I'm not fully qualified to say whether those constraints could be addressed and that the high density zone would work in those spots, but the locations that come to mind is Frankton and more towards the
centre. Oh, I think the way to go would be just to get your book, just mark them on a map. We understand all the disclaimers, but your views are obviously very relevant to us, and we would like to understand that. Let's just draw a line under that question for now. Turning to the provisions themselves, I would like to understand more clearly. So now I'm looking at your Appendix 1 to the 42 article. There is a lot of reference, and you've described in your summary just now about the need to provide even greater emphasis on this idea of quality of the design and quality design. And what I can see from my vantage point, because I got the best seat with the window view, is, for instance, the new building next to the Eygards Hotel. And the last 2 weeks I've been here, I can't walk 100 metres down the street without someone offering an opinion very strongly one way or the other of whether it's good, bad, ugly, evil, or something else. And the purpose of that is just to say, and I'm also aware from reading in the paper yesterday, a similar debate in Arrowtown, but that's a separate story again. But when we think about objectives and policies talking about quality of the design, what do you think that actually means?
I think it's also potentially an ambiguous term. But it is used in the urban design protocol and defined through that document and the provisions that come into that. But quality I suppose, is assessed and site specific, context specific. So it's a difficult thing to define, but our provisions aim to provide guidance around what we see the attributes of development that we see as creating to a quality of development.
In light of that ambiguity, are you confident that it can be implemented? How do we ensure we get something if we're not quite sure what the something is?
I think, although it's not known at the moment whether the design guidelines would be developed, although council's indicated the desire to develop them, I would see that being an avenue where the styles of development and the attributes which we see as delivering quality could be further defined. Without that, should they not be developed, consideration to quality would be considered through matters of discretion that we have if the development was in matters of control, if the development was pursuing down that path, or a site specific, context specific assessment or anything beyond that. And with obviously the urban design panel still existing, and that would be likely to be recommended for larger developments in the zone.
Do you think there's a risk that quality just means expensive?
There could be that risk, but I don't associate quality with being expensive. You can have a relatively inexpensive design, but it can still be quality in terms of the way it's laid out.
The last part of policy 922 talks about environmental performance. And again, 9.2.2.7 achieves a high environmental performance. But you're now proposing to remove the Home Star method, which I had understood as being the method that implemented things like high environmental performance. So my question isn't whether or not you think the Home Star should in fact stay, it's whether the policies need further revision if the methods to achieve that outcome are no longer supported. Or is there another method that I'm not following?
We still support, and the provisions still seek to support design that has the same outcome as the Home Star Green Star. The reason for removing it is because of difficulties in implementation and a number of other reasons, but those tools may change over time. There may be different tools that are used. So I suppose those provisions, the objectives and policies, still seek to realise those components of development, and that development is designed to be better environmentally. And if we have the opportunity to see those things through built form, then I see those provisions being of value for that. Without them, and regardless of having the Home Star Green Star, we may not have the opportunity to seek better building designs.
Well, that leads to two questions. The first is what you feel the high environmental performance means. And the second is if you could just take me to some of the methods that you think, outside of the discretionary or non-compliant activity, are implementing that.
to generally the location, external appearance and design of buildings. And that may give some scope to look at those things. They may need to be more explicit on that aspect.
Okay.
I mean, as I read that policy 9227, it really, to me, seems to say that you can increase the building height in certain circumstances, and those circumstances are quality of the design and high environmental performance. But there's nothing in relation to the height rules that take that any further out here.
No, I'm just looking at that now. Well, this is that matter of discretion for form or guidance. The same, it hasn't been carried over to building height, so. Would be a value to replicate the same there to implement that policy.
One of the matters we discussed with Mr. Walsh, that I just want your opinion on too, was whether, and there may be a definition or clarification somewhere in the plan I haven't seen, I'll accept that. But whether, when the plan's provisions, typically objectives and policies, talk about streets and public spaces, whether they are talking about public streets and public open spaces, or areas that might be privately owned but which have varying degrees of public access. Are you able to help clarify what you think the plan was applying to? Just in terms of the high density zone, of course. So we can look at policy 9.2.2.1, which talks about streets and other public spaces. And so there's a question of whether an applicant should be required to try and invest in active edges and all that along a private lane that might have some public access to it, for instance.
In terms of this, the provisions in the high-density zone, I would think that they are intended to apply to more public spaces and streets, subject to more use and wider use. So access assessments, I would think, would not be subject to the same requirements, but I'd have to look at that in terms of how that word is applied through the remainder of the district plan.
And on that basis, well, you presumably think that's the appropriate distinction.
That's my view, my take on it. I think there would be also value with having those sorts of provisions for public reserves if they were intended to cater for a volume of foot traffic or pedestrian or cycle activity, for example, and they were connected as part of a wider network, but isolated reserve strips or access easements, perhaps not so much.
Okay. I've just got some questions on the height rules. And if we turn first, we can actually just deal with it at 9.5.1, because my question on 9.5.3 is the exact same question. I just want to clarify the intention, because as I'm reading 9.5.1.1, three stories up to 12 metres is a restricted discretionary activity, and four stories up to 15 metres is a restricted discretionary activity. So what is the point of the three-storey up to 12-metre restricted discretionary activity?
Sorry, just to clarify, the three-storey, the maximum height of 12 metres would be permitted.
Right.
And then the...
Does it say that anywhere? I suppose it's a non-compliant status, isn't it?
Yes, so that the standards table is intended to function that the standards listed are permitted and then the non-compliant status.
So permitted to 12, restricted discretion already to 15, non-compliant above that.
Yes.
I noticed that the non-compliant status only talks about metres, not stories, but the rules talk about stories. So what would happen if I complied with the metres but didn't comply with the stories? Or it makes it a little bit to sneak an extra story in.
The way the stories are referred to and used in those rules is to provide a sort of benchmark as to what's permitted, I suppose, and what the visual form of development that we see should be permitted in that zone as being that type of scale, and then beyond that we're looking at more, gaining more and intensifying more than the pure height limit applies. And on that I also acknowledge that the sloping sites don't have the same distinction for stories, and there can be multiple stories depending on how the building's stepped up the slope, and it can present different ways of different aspects. So the way that 12 metres was developed, as I understand, was that it was intended to, because I understand there's been some discussion about the roof bonus, so the three stories with 12 metres was intended to provide some room for the roof. So it's a conservative estimate of stories being 4 metres per story. That's how effectively it's working on three stories and 12 metres.
So if I proposed an 11.99 metre tall building that was 4 stories, that would come under the restricted discretionary banner, would it? Which just talks about up to 15 metres. I got that right.
I'm not clear if that's what you intend.
I can see that there's some that rule may need to be clarified in that aspect, depending on, I guess my concern is the 12 metres was put out there as the baseline anticipated for the zone being 3 stories, recognising a little bit of space for the roof. If that then becomes a pure height as well as a roof bonus, we'd have to look at how that is also affecting increasing the overall height. So, but accepting that the 12 metres is the level, the height and the form of development that we anticipate in the zone.
And again, a very basic question, is the term storey defined in the plan at all? I didn't hear, sir.
I'm not sure.
We just have to adjourn for a few minutes. We'll give you a chance to look up.
Do you stop the recording then?